Welcome to Pull Up a Chair. I'm Bina Mehta, the chair of KPMG in the UK. And in each episode, I talk to some of the world's most influential leaders and thinkers about sustainable growth, what it means to them, and why it matters. We also explore the challenges and opportunities of delivering growth responsibly and ethically in a way that meets the needs of people, planet, and profit. Today, I'm joined by Lisa Brankin, Chair and Managing Director of Ford of Britain, a business very much at the forefront of the UK's transport transition. We'll be discussing the challenges and opportunities facing Britain's automotive manufacturers, from global competition and supply chain disruption to the UK's engineering skills base and changing consumer needs. We'll also be delving into what's kept Lisa at Ford for over 30 years and what has driven her to the very top of the male-dominated automotive industry. Lisa was Ford UK's first female director and now its first female chair. Lisa Brankin, please pull up a chair. Lisa, I'm absolutely delighted that you could join me today. You are the chair and managing director of Ford Britain, and in fact was the first female director of Ford UK. So what an incredible journey you must have been on in a very male-dominated industry. And thank you for coming on the podcast. Can I start with the question I start with everybody, which is, what does sustainable growth mean to you?
So firstly, Bina, thank you so much for having me. I'm really delighted to be here. So the first question, I think sustainable growth means two things to me. One, I think you need a good foundation of a business that delivers, can firmly deliver a return for shareholders, look after the interests of its employees and its customers, but also do that in a way that treads lightly on the environment. So I think it's kind of two parts for me. It's you've got to have a really firm foundation of your business that will allow you to grow from, and then you need to find a way to do that that has a minimal impact on the environment.
And it's interesting you say that, it's a firm foundation of business, because it ultimately it's a business. But do you think it is possible to tread lightly across sort of the needs of people, planet, and profit?
So our business is going through a really big transition at the minute, our business and actually our industry. So we're moving in the UK and in Europe from traditional internal combustion engines into electrified vehicles. And that requires all sorts of massive change from what we make to the way we make it. So that in itself is a challenge. And then doing that in a way that reduces your carbon footprint is equally challenging. So the short answer to your question is yes. The longer answer is, I think it will take some time to get there, because whilst we go through the transition, we see that in that whole process, we're seeing that customers are paying more for electrified product. Now that wouldn't be the way that you would hope that it would end up, mm-hmm. that we'd be able to be smarter and faster and be able to deliver a more cost-effective electrified product. But in the short term, I think that's a challenge.
I wanted to just touch on geopolitics and yes. some of the geopolitical tensions that businesses are navigating.
Yes.
And many businesses are sort of facing disruption in their supply chains, their nearshoring, friendshoring to maintain resilience. And as a global business, Ford will have to be navigating that. You've got strengths in manufacturing globally.
Yes.
I'd love to understand how the geopolitical environment is impacting you and Ford in Britain in particular.
So we are a truly global company. So we manufacture products around the world. We develop products around the world. And we're a very capital intensive business, and also a business with very long lead times. So once you decide that you're going to build a plant somewhere and manufacture something somewhere, you're kind of stuck. You're stuck there for a period of time. And also what we're finding is, as I said to you at the beginning, that we're changing what we're building. So we're also having to look at new places to source things from. So I think that global politics affects us in terms of trade implications, tariffs, not tariffs. Supply route stability and supply routes is really important. And even weather conditions, flooding. We had some flooding situations a couple of years ago in Germany, a supplier in Germany that impacted supply of parts into our plants. So all of those things affect what we do and impact what we do. And even the semiconductor crisis that everyone kind of knows a lot about, that had a really big impact on our business and what we could produce and how much we could produce of it.
So you've just talked about some of the tensions around time frames, you know, the lead time you need to be able to go on your journey, together with some of these, you know, environment, geopolitical tensions that we're facing into. How do you maintain agility? Because you presumably need to kind of change your decision-making quite quickly.
So it's about flexibility in what you're doing. And a really good example of that is we know that in the UK that after 2035, that we will only be able to sell new electric vehicles. And we know today that you can sell electric vehicles, hybrid vehicles, diesel and petrol vehicles. So we know the end point and we know where we are today, but we're not 100% sure of the trajectory between that. So what we need to do is through our manufacturing plants, try to maintain some degree of flexibility. However, you do have to bet on what the future looks like. You have to decide at what point are we going to be selling more electric than less. So you have to take a bet. And some of that's you're educated, of course, but you don't really know what's going to happen in 10 years. And in some of our timeframes, that's the timeframes that we're planning for. So you have to It is taking a bet on what the future is going to be, and then you've got to commit to it, and then you've got to try and make it happen and hope that legislation and circumstances don't change around it before you get there.
And it's really refreshing to hear you talk about having to take bets, because you are making long-term bets based on the information you have today, and we know the world changes around us constantly.
That's right.
So actually it's quite refreshing to hear somebody, you know, we have to take bets and we have to take risks to get the opportunities. Yes. There was some research recently that said that electric vehicle sales in 2023 was about 16.6%, a little bit lower than it was the previous year. But what was really interesting is the OBR now forecasts that electric vehicles will represent 38% of new car sales in 2027. That's only 3 years away. Whereas previously the estimates were something like 67%. So that is quite drastically different. Yes. I'd just like to get Ford's view, or your view on the likely take-up of electric vehicles in the country?
So we've definitely seen customer demand for electric vehicles drop, and it's very much impacted by which kind of customers are buying them. So the new car market, like many markets, has different segments. Retail customers, so private individuals that buy cars, only about less than 10% of them last year chose to have a battery electric vehicle, a proper electric vehicle. Whereas fleet customers who potentially drive vehicles as company cars and pay benefit in kind taxation, because there's a beneficial taxation rate for electric vehicles, over 25% of those people opted for electric vehicle. So where we see incentivization, it's certainly driving adoption. Where there isn't incentivization, it's not driving adoption. Now, the thing that's happening underneath the scenes and behind the scenes is the government has implemented in the UK a thing called a vehicle emissions trading scheme. And what that does, it mandates for manufacturers the mix of electric vehicles, electric cars and electric vans that we've got to sell in the UK. So we've been tasked or incentivized by the government to hit fixed mixes that increase quite rapidly up to 2030, where new cars will have to be an 80% mix by the time we meet 2030. So we're trying to balance what is proper customer demand by what the government legislation is out there. Now, some of that I think will maybe come when there's more choice for customers. Mm-hmm. So we see more and more and more electric vehicles coming into the market. There's a lot of negative press at the minute, I think, around electric vehicles. And maybe if we can begin to overcome some of those issues, we'll see people become more accepting. But certainly it is a little bit of a challenge, shall we say, to get to the government targets they want us to reach.
And you've just talked about, you know, customers need to be incentivized. There are trade-offs, aren't there? Because customers need to balance the affordability, the range or battery range, because every single one of us who is now looking at a new car or thinking about cars will be thinking about, what do I get if I get a battery, if I get a hybrid? And then you've also got the availability of what I would say affordable as well. So when you're dealing with that, and also when you're thinking about chargeability, you know, charging, we have an infrastructure challenge as well around charging. Not everybody has access to the. So how do you think consumers can really balance those trade-offs?
I think different customers, different trade-offs, as I said. So we know that for our company car drivers, there's a really big financial benefit for them to have an electric vehicle. So they're adopting and overcoming the issues that you talk about, range, because of a financial benefit. Mm. And in simple terms, most of our company car drivers are doing the same kind of, probably more mileage than a private user is. So they're happy to take a risk on charging or the other issues because they get a financial benefit. I think retail customers, you know, probably because they're spending their own money, are probably a little bit more risk averse. And we've probably got through all of the early adopters and enthusiasts, and we're getting into more of the majority of the market. And I think that's a job for us as manufacturers and salespeople to explain to people that actually home charging is really viable for you, and to talk through some of the benefits and upside of charging. Because actually most people on most days undertake very short journeys, but what they worry about is the two very, very, very long journeys that they take once a year or twice a year. And we just need to get people to think a little bit more in a more balanced way about making that choice.
Yeah, I think I heard somewhere that the average journey is 15 miles.
Yes.
And if I think about, you know, you're absolutely right. We always think about the one journey that is 300 miles.
That's
or
right.
200 miles. I think we all agree that we need cleaner, greener alternatives to the traditional internal combustion engine vehicle. For anyone that is listening and is thinking about the switch or wanting to make the switch, how sustainable are they?
So I think one of the really massive benefits about electrification immediately is air quality. So I think that if you live in any large city, one of the big issues that faces everyone has been air quality, and electric vehicles can have a significant impact on that. I think the sustainability of the vehicle as a whole really depends on the way that vehicles are manufactured and built, and providing that we're using sustainable energy sources and responsibly sourced minerals, etc., for vehicles, then they are a sustainable solution. And as a manufacturer, we signed up to Route Zero, which we're one of the few manufacturers to do that, and COP26, which is kind of committing to that carbon neutral transportation solutions of the future. And as a manufacturer, we're working really hard through our own plants around the world and in Europe and in the UK to have carbon-free energy generation, and working through our supply chains as well. So I think, yes, there are questions, if we're really honest, today, but we're on a journey of how we get there, I think.
Yeah, I think you talked about it a little bit earlier, you know, in terms of the cost of the vehicles today are probably higher than you might expect them to be long term.
Yes.
And it's that trade-off and decision, the economic decision,
right,
as to whether I get the benefit. And some of these benefits they're not visible or tangible, right?
No.
These are long-term benefits.
There are long-term benefits, but also, if you think about, if you charge at home, the cost of charging is significantly less than running filling up petrol or diesel.
Yeah.
So we would encourage people to look at the whole cost of running a vehicle rather than just the purchase price, the sticker price at the start.
Ford's a really hugely respected global brand. I mean, you know, who doesn't know Ford? You're going through an evolutionary journey yourselves, and you've talked a little bit about that, from sort of traditional, you know, internal combustion engines to the electrification journey. Could you maybe tell us a little bit more about your journey and how you see that?
So in the UK, we obviously sell cars and vans. So we sell the best-selling passenger car, it's a Puma, and we sell a huge number of commercial vehicles and support UK business and industry with our commercial vehicle business. But we also we build engines, transmissions, and we're going to be building battery electric power packs for production around the world. And we've also got a research and development centre based in Essex, and that's the home of commercial vehicles in Europe. And it also does some emissions testing and is also a lead in diesel engine development around Europe. And if I think about the journey we've been at that site over the past 5 years, it's amazing. So I think about the way the teams have moved from hundreds of individual dyno cells with engineers with laptops attached, testing for emissions. So we've now got these multifaceted cells that can simulate driving conditions, can do temperature testing. And we don't have vehicles, we just have elements of a vehicle that can, through computer programming, run all sorts of infinite variables around test cycles to make our vehicles more efficient, drive better, hit emission standards in a faster and more efficient way. And to do that, we've had to re-engineer the way we do things, and we've had to reskill the workforce from one set of skills that was really purposeful and appropriate 5 years ago to a set of skills now that will see us through the next 10 or 15 years of development. And I think it's amazing. And we're still building vehicles. We've still got vans on the road and cars on the road. We're just doing it in a very different way, a very future-focused way.
So you've really articulated how the way that you manufacture vehicles has really evolved with technology. How are you adopting AI?
I don't know we've maybe fully adopted AI to the full extent that it can be, but one of the areas, actually, the teams, I had a little tour a couple of weeks ago around some of our test facilities, and one of the things that we do is we simulate what it's like to drive vehicles over different road conditions. So in the olden days, you would have taken a transit van and you would have driven it over mountains, across rivers, round test circuits, over just different road circuits, and you have done that over a myriad of different temperature conditions. Now we make up those conditions inside a test cell, and we test for noise, vibration and harshness, we test for emissions, we seek to calibrate the engine and the transmission to make it as good as it possibly can be, and AI is involved in some of that kind of testing scenarios. And those testing cells run in Dunton, but if you're an engineer working on your, I don't know, transmission, and you work in South America or North America, you can have access to all that data live, and you can work remotely, and you can adapt and engineer real time through the testing process. So at the moment, that's where AI is kind of coming into play with us.
It's really interesting, isn't it, how you augment the individual's day job and work, and it can be anywhere in the world by the looks of it, because you're able to do that. But it's also about how it helps the organisation just keep iterating and getting better each time. So in the UK last year, we saw a delay on the ban of sales of petrol and diesel vehicles to 2035. You've talked about the vehicle emissions trading system and what that means in terms of targets you have to meet, and also production targets. How does Ford navigate that, especially when you've got an onslaught of, you know, low cost alternatives also on the horizon?
It's really, really challenging, actually. So in the UK, we've actually got to hit 6 emission standards. So for non-electric vehicles, we've got to hit an average CO2 number in GB. We've got for cars and for commercial vehicles. And then for cars and commercial vehicles, we've got to hit a mix of BEV for each. And then Northern Ireland's handled separately at the minute. So we've got to hit an average CO2 target for those fleets. So it's actually very difficult to manage what you're selling and hit all of those mixes. So it's really, really challenging. We've got the most amazingly complicated spreadsheet that's tracking everything, and we're watching everything very carefully. And it's about just understanding the market, knowing what levers to pull, knowing when to put the brakes on. And unfortunately, we understand what the schemes are all about, but our customers don't. So it'd be really helpful if everybody who was buying a car would understand, if they could just help us hit our targets, that'd be great. But unfortunately, it doesn't work that. So we're kind of you've got to manage everything really carefully. You've got to know your market really well, and you've got to plan really carefully. But it is very complex and actually really, really challenging. Although, to be fair, you know, across Europe and in the UK, we've been hitting CO2 targets, you know, year in, year out. This just makes it a little bit more complicated.
Yeah. And that's a trick, isn't it? It's how do you move forward but still maintain within the guardrails that are set for you?
That's right.
And they sometimes also come in and out as well. So you've got to navigate this ever movement. You've touched on people and workforce. I'd love to understand how you talked about evolving the skills of the workforce over the last 5 years so that's fit for the future. And that's not unique to your industry. I think most industries are trying to face into what does the workforce of the future stand for. But you do have a unique demographic in your workforce, should I say. So in an organisation like ours, you know, our median age is 27, you know, so we've got a sort of real interesting profile across all generations. I think yours is slightly different. How do you bring your colleagues, who some of whom have been in the organisation for decades, along on that journey with you?
So we do have a more stable workforce, and we have people that have been with us for a very long time, and that has huge strengths, because in an environment that's changing very quickly, it's actually very helpful to have people that have experience and understand how the market works, you know, what their jobs are, how to pull all the right levers. That's very helpful. I think to get people to change, it's about painting a really compelling picture of what the future looks like and why we need to go there. I think that's the thing that we need to do. And I think most of our employees understand the move towards electrification, but it's not just electrification. It's also the move into connected vehicles. So our cars and vans today have all got modems in them. Yeah. And providing we've got customer permission, we can see vehicle information. So particularly on our commercial vehicle teams, we've got a thing called Ford Live. We can monitor live vehicle data. So we can see potentially issues that are going to come up before they actually happen in vehicles, and we can be really proactive with support. Before you book your vehicle into a dealership, they can check the health of your vehicle before it arrives and anticipate things they might need to do rather than open up an engine and find it out after the effect. So the opportunity for people is huge, and our business is huge. And actually, you know, what we find is when people see the opportunity, they're actually inspired by it and not frightened by it, and they grasp the opportunity and come up with great ideas. So I think it's about painting a vision for people of where we're going, and also giving them the confidence that they've got a future in that place in that future, which is why I said to you at the beginning, for me, you know, any sustainable growth's got to come off of a good foundation. So as you're taking people with you, they understand that they've got a role in the future as well.
I think your purpose statement is to help build a better world where every person is free to move and pursue their dreams.
Well, that's kind of comes from our founder, Henry Ford, who was a real person, and his family are still involved in the business. So, yeah, so it feels like quite an authentic statement, given that we've still got family connections with the company.
And also it plays to what you were saying around inspiring your colleagues with a vision. And it's very clear what the vision of the brand really stands for. Culture is really important, and culture is set at the top and the tone at the top. So I think you as a chair have a very big role in nurturing it. But I'd love to understand how you would describe the culture that really helps you support that purpose. And I guess your role in that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think culture is something that we talk about, but actually it's something that's very hard to really grasp, isn't it? It's a really challenging subject. I think culture comes from beliefs and what you believe and what you think. Excellence, focus and collaboration are our three areas that we talk about, but it's not enough to talk about it. You've actually got to live it and do it. And you can't sort of talk yourself out of something you've behaved yourself into. You know, you've got to walk the talk, and you've got to be consistent. And I think that's the way that you begin to make people believe that culture change is possible, and that they begin to lead by your example. I remember, I think it might have been my first job where I was managing a few people, and my manager at the time took me to task, because he said, if you panic, your team panics. Don't panic. It doesn't matter what it is. You're the one that's got to be calm. So I think, or set the tone of what you want your team to be. So I think very much culture change has to come from initially from the top, because people have got, you've got to walk the talk, and then it's got to be allowed to percolate down through the organisation.
I think you're absolutely right. You have to create an environment where it can percolate down.
Yes.
And that's why it's so powerful when the leaders really walk the talk. I like the way that you said excellence, focus and collaboration. Play on words here. Ford Focus, that's what I think about. But Puma is definitely the number one selling brand. Is that right?
Yeah, yes.
Okay. You joined as a graduate trainee. I think it was in sales and marketing.
That's right.
As I've said, in a very male-dominated environment, you were the first female director in Ford Britain, and you are the first female chair at Ford Britain. As you've sort of come through on your journey and as you sort of interact and think about the future, what sort of qualities do you think the good leaders possess, and how is that likely to evolve as we look in the next sort of 10, 20-year horizon?
Yeah, I think this is probably, this is a really hard question, actually, Vina. I think a leader's job is to set the direction and to provide your team with the framework that they operate within. And your job is then to coach them along the way, and if they're getting off track, put them back on track. And I think that irrespective of what happens in the future, that's what leaders have got to do. The other thing I think it's really important for a leader to be in any shape, make, or form is to be authentic. I think it's really exhausting if you feel you've got to be something that's not you to do your job. It's very difficult. So I think as a good leader, you've got to be comfortable in yourself, and you've got to be able to be yourself. And then you've got to support your team, and you've got to be good at picking a good team to let them do what they do. And I think sometimes you've got to be a little bit ruthless. So if you don't have the right team, you've got to get the right team to allow them to operate.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Having the right team around you and working together collectively is really important. What's the best bit of advice you've ever been given?
One of the most practical bits of advice I had was somebody I worked for, he said to me, just don't press send, sleep on it.
Yeah.
And that kind of is about, you know, being hasty on, you know, replying. But in general, you know, sometimes taking a pause is actually a really good thing to do. You don't have to rush headlong into everything. A pause is sometimes a really good thing to do.
What one thing would you like to have known when you started your journey that you know now? Obviously, there's lots of things I know now that I'd love to wish that I'd known 20, 30 years ago. Is there anything that in particular that you'd like to have known?
I would, maybe not quite answering your question, but I'd like to go back and just say to me, believe in yourself, is what I'd like to say. I probably wouldn't have listened, but I would like to have a chance to go back and say that.
Yeah. What sustains you beyond work?
I really like being outside. I like being outside. Maybe it's a sign of my age, but I suddenly developed a passion for gardening. I like walking. I really like getting outside into the fresh air. I think if you do a job that's inside, that keeps you inside a lot, I think being outside and having a chance to just decompress is a really, really good thing to do. And I like to just be active, I think. And also it kind of lets you, your brain, you know, slow down, think. Some of your best ideas are when you're not meant to be thinking about them, I think.
I think you're probably right there. You're definitely right there. And you know, whenever we've spoken, you're very thoughtful and mindful of how you bring your colleagues. It comes through loud and clear when we talk. You know, you talk about coaching and helping, giving direction to people, but you genuinely care and you actually want to help people be better in their job. And that's what comes through loud and clear when we talk. This has been an incredible conversation because we started off on recognising that businesses are there to succeed and that you have to tread carefully around, that's a lovely phrase, tread carefully around the planet and the people challenges. You talk about bets, refreshingly, which is really interesting because an organisation like Ford, where people will think of it as a manufacturing, long-standing business, you are actually very forward-looking because you have to be.
Yes.
You have to be because of the way your capital-intensive sort of decisions are. Also, you're navigating this real delicate dance of guidelines from government, numbers you have to hit, and then you've got low-cost alternatives, which I'm assuming if they're not coming from an organisation like yours, which is steeped in manufacturing, it's starting from scratch, they're starting from a very different place. All of those things are forcing you to think long-term and also about consumer trends.
That's right.
And how do you get the consumer to come along the journey with you? You talk about excellence, focus and collaboration, but your leadership advice, I think, is a really interesting one to reflect on. We talk about authenticity a lot, but it is about actually leading with intent and purpose. It's about leading with humility. I think that's what comes through when I meet you and I know you. And believe in yourself. I think that's something that everybody should be doing. Because I think most people, when you look back, you think, gosh, I would never have imagined I would be here today. But it's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Bina.
Thanks for joining me today on Pull Up a Chair. Whether you're at home, at work, or somewhere in between. I do hope you'll join me next time for more insights from business leaders and thinkers on how to unlock sustainable growth that delivers to the needs of people, planet, and profit. Goodbye.